This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Item one today, the week that was, a brief recap. Item number two, Social Security, Medicare, and the bottom line. Item number three,
America, you are wearing the wrong bra.
Oh, if only I were kidding. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday. It is the last day of May. Good as always to have you with us. And we're going to dig right in to get going today. Spend the first four minutes and 45 seconds of the program figuring out what the heck happened this week. Catherine Rampell from the New York Times is here to help wrap things up. She is at the Times. Felix Salmon from Reuters is in our studios in New York. Hey, guys.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
So, Felix, quickly as we get going today, what the heck happened in the markets? The Dow off 208 points, 1.something%. The apocalypse upon us? I mean, what's going on?
There's something called the Hindenburg Omen.
The what?
Apparently, all of the lines crossed in a very bad way, and that means...
And it
exploded? It's technical
what?
Now. It's astrology.
Oh.
You can come up with any number of spurious reasons why stocks went down, just as you can come up with any number of spurious reasons why stocks went up. And it's fun, right? We've had a pretty boring stock market of late, so it's good to get a bit of volatility in there.
Well, yeah, but Catherine, I mean, you know, the data's been not so bad. Housing's good. Consumer confidence is up. I mean, what the?
I mean, I would say the data's been mixed.
Okay.
Certainly the housing numbers have been very strong, so that's good news. But we got some bad numbers out of the European Union today.
True. On unemployment,
Right. Unemployment reached a record high. You have a quarter of young people out of work, looking for work.
Right. Over there.
So, you know, maybe that's bumming people out. There are plenty of things to look for with bad news if you're looking hard enough, I guess.
It's also the end of the month, though, and people are clearing out, you know, month-end stuff, rotating, rebalancing. You never really understand these moves.
All that portfolio management stuff. All right. So even given that, though, Felix, what's your gut telling you? Where are we on the whole... How's the economy feeling thing?
My gut's telling me we're actually okay. The GDP numbers weren't that bad. The stock market is pretty healthy. I mean, it might be down today, but it's still up a lot, you know, over the past few months. And we seem to be ticking along. We could do with more jobs, but economically speaking, we're doing okay.
Yeah, we'll talk jobs next Friday. But Catherine, quickly, what's your gut? And then we'll move on.
I think that the economy has proven relatively resilient given some of the drag from the government that we've seen, you know, particularly in the consumer side of things. You know, consumers have been spending more than one might expect. I don't think we're out of the woods yet, particularly because of austerity measures, which include tax hikes and spending cuts and everything else. You know, that coupled with the fact that we're still not on a path where we had like a really, really strong, quickly growing private sector to make up for that.
All right. Felix, a couple of things I want to tick through here in no particular order. Item number one, Liberty Reserve, that virtual currency thing that got shut down by the feds Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever it was. I hate to say this because, you know, we covered it and we did a story on it and that's great. But why does this matter? Are we all going the way of virtual currencies?
Well, no, the lesson of Liberty Reserve and the fact that the Fed's shutting it down is that we're not. That anyone using these exactly. kind of things, whether they're things you'd never heard of, like Liberty Reserve, or things you might have heard of, like Bitcoin, is that you really do risk the whole thing being shut down and losing what you have on deposit. So this is the U.S. government making it very clear that the U.S. dollar is the unit of currency which we should all be using, and don't be messing around with other payments, currencies, and the like.
All right, fair enough. Catherine, Smithfield Farms, China bought into it this past week for $5 billion. Lots of commentary this week about how the Chinese are buying all these American companies. Is that of concern to you?
Not particularly. I mean, there have been concerns about China or other foreign governments investing in other types of resources or companies mm-hmm. that might be of particular strategic, necessity to yeah. the United States, like our ports or our sources of oil or various other things. Pork, I don't know. I mean,
well, although this one is going to get that national security review, right, by the Committee on Foreign
right,
Investment.
Right, yeah. CFIUS has been requested right. to look into it sort of
voluntarily.
Bacon
is
actually.
A national security issue.
Bacon
right,
not,
exactly. It's a national treasure. I don't know if it's a national security issue.
All right, you guys are making me hungry. One more thing, Felix, and then we're going to run. Japan has been volatile of late, just to bring it back to stock markets. A big drop, 10 days ago? Another big drop in the Nikkei 2 or 3 days ago here. Abenomics and the future of Japan?
So Japan has been doing absolutely wonderfully over mm-hmm. the past few months. The stock market has been on a tear. The stock market has now dropped to where it was, 3 weeks ago, yeah. something like that. We have to put this in perspective. Japan is doing something unprecedented and very bold, fiscal policy, monetary policy, everything. And there are going to be bumps along the way, but this is not in any way evidence that it has failed or not working.
All right, fair enough. You heard it here first. Felix Hammond from Reuters and Catherine Rampell from the New York Times. We'll talk to you guys soon. See ya.
Bye, Kate.
All right. Have a good weekend. The month of May was good for Wall Street. The last week of it, the last day in particular, not so much. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. First, the facts of this next story, and then the analysis. The government released its annual report on the health of the Social Security and Medicare trust funds today. Medicare now has until 2026 until it runs out of money. That's 2 years beyond the last forecast we got. Social Security, on the other hand, is still on track to go bust in 20 years. That is not all that far away, and yet there does seem to be a certain what-me-worry attitude about retirement planning in this country. Which gets us to the analysis and the chronically unflappable Alfred E. Newman. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
Right about now you're thinking, Alfred E. Newman? He's not even a real person. True, he was dreamed up by Mad Magazine in 1954 with big ears, a gap-tooth grin, and an unforgettable theme song.
What we worry, I don't even care.
Ah, but should he care?
Alfred needs to worry.
That's Holly Kylan, a financial advisor at ING Bank. After all, Kylan says Newman turns 59 in November.
He needs to stop and take inventory and say, holy crap, this might not work the way I thought it was going to work.
Kylan says no one really knows how things will work if the Social Security trust funds run out of money. The government says the checks would still come, but they would be about 25% smaller. Charles Campbell is with Eagle Financial Publications. He says Newman and everybody else should start setting aside 1 or 2% more of their paychecks toward retirement.
It's a difference of you living in Florida in a nice retirement place as opposed to working at Walmart your last 10 years of your life as a greeter because you didn't save properly for your retirement.
Stuart Ritter is a financial planner at T. Rowe Price. He says Newman doesn't have to freak out. He just has to save that little bit extra.
If he takes some small steps to make sure he has more money than he otherwise would, then no, he doesn't have to worry.
Cue the Newman song.
We worry, I don't even care.
In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
I didn't actually know there was an Alfred E. Newman song. How great was that? All right, random fact of the day for me today that kind of blew my mind. Almost 80% of women in this country are wearing the wrong size bra. That, my friends, is what you call a business opportunity, which is why Jockey International has invested 8 years in trying to reinvent the bra. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour drew the unlikely assignment.
You might think that walking up to random women on the street and asking about their boobs might get you a restraining order. But it turns out when it comes to the hassle of bras, women are happy to talk.
Even if you find a bra that fits your boobies, the straps are too big or it hurts, it's definitely not easy.
The standard size is not the same for every woman.
That was Marie Josma, Sarah DiGatano, and Shalima Mitchell. Jockey International says it has the solution to the standard 12 bra sizes. Mariah Fantagrassi is head designer there.
We did body scans of over 800 women to come up with 55 sizes.
So forget A cups and double Ds. This system is based on the breast shape as well as chest size. Supported by 26 international patents, Jockey's mostly women designers were able to get rid of the wire.
So it's essentially the closest thing to custom.
A special sizing kit can be ordered online for $20, which goes towards the purchase of a bra, which runs $60. High price aside, there's a real risk in trying to bust up the system. Marshall Cohen is chief retail analyst with NPD Group.
Because they've not only got to educate the consumer on the benefits of this, they've also got to prove that it's worthy of all the effort to experiment with it.
But as Stephen Addis with Addis Croissant Consulting points out,
this is a category with a lot of dissatisfaction.
How do you know? Because there's Double Divas, a reality TV show about bra fitting.
Molly, we got double trouble.
FYI, the Jockey bra doesn't come in push-up version, but the company isn't ruling it out. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
That orange juice you might have had for breakfast this morning is getting more expensive. Prices hit a high for the year this week, in part because hurricane season is upon us. Tropical storm and later Hurricane Barbara got some people nervous. And also, in part, it was because of, well, capitalism. Mark Wheeler is a third-generation orange grower down in Lake Placid, Florida. Mr. Wheeler, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Prices are up. Were you expecting this? Is this, you know, normal?
Well, no, we've... You believe that maybe some of the excitement with the naming of Tropical Depression Barbara maybe was the impetus. But over the past few weeks, although I'm not a futures expert, the 150 level has been tested apparently a few times.
And that's 150, what, a box, a pound? What? How do you
150
that?
A pound solid.
So a buck and a half a pound then. You know, the phrase that you're starting to see when you read up on orange juice, as I've been doing today, is that there are speculators in the market now.
There are. It's tough sometimes when you're trying as a grower to identify what's going on in the futures market and the pricing, because sometimes the futures will actually act contrary to what we see in the marketplace.
Does that make you uneasy at all?
It does. I mean, it's you know, we've learned a few painful lessons over the years that we can't rely on it exclusively, because the futures market is one of those things, once you think you've got it figured out, that's when it's going to pinch you.
Yeah, and it's not just OJ, right?
Far as from what I hear, yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Do you do better when the price per pound goes up? Do you get that as profit?
We do. You know, the short-term perspective, you know, everybody gets excited when the fruit check comes in. It's a little bit bigger than the one you had last year. But the flip side of that is, if you're in this business for the long haul, which we perceive ourselves as doing so, you know, my grandfather and father were partners in the business years ago, and my brother and I hope that our kids, you know, at least some of our kids at some point in the future, will have an interest in sustaining it. And we realize when we go to the grocery store and we see the price of orange juice run up, I mean, it has with all commodities, but we don't want it to be to the point to where we realize that, you know, once that consumer's scared away, it takes a lot to get them back. So, yeah, while it's exciting to make a little more money off your fruit than you did the year before, you also got to look at it and say, hey, we want to make sure that we don't lose them for fear of a price run up.
You don't actually have to go to the store to buy your OJ, right? You've got a special reserve barrel out back someplace?
we do squeeze quite a few at the house, but every once in a while we'll get lazy and pick some up at the local grocery store.
Right, good. Mark Wheeler is the chief financial officer at Wheeler Farms. He's down in Lake Placid, Florida. Mr. Wheeler, thanks very much for your time, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Coming up,
this is really a marketing and a branding opportunity for us outside of the arena, more so than inside the building.
Or it's just a t-shirt. But first, let's do the numbers. Well, I was so totally expecting the wah-wah trombones today. The Dow Industrial's off 208 points, about a 1.3%, closed at 15,115. No, I don't pick the numbers music. The NASDAQ fell 35 points, about 1%, ended things at 3455. The S&P 500, well, it gave back 23 points, 1.4%, finished at 1634. The week the Dow gave back 1.2%, the NASDAQ, rather, slipped 0.1%. The S&P 500 surrendered 1.1%. But for the month, just to wrap it all up for you, all three indices notched gains. The Dow up 1.9%. The NASDAQ jumped 3.8%. The S&P 500 came in second with a 2.1% gain. So on to today's trading, shall we? Movie maker Lionsgate roared up 2.75% on strong results of its Twilight finale. Sticking with entertainment, Netflix added 1.6% to continue its comeback. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.13%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on construction spending for April. Are there new cars on the road? Automakers are scheduled to release U.S. sales for May. And International Clothesline Week continues. Yep, hang and stuff to dry to save on your energy bill. Drape it over that stair climber in the basement. Put it to use. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. There's a new series coming to the ABC Family Cable Network. It's called The Fosters, one of the first dramas to focus on the ups and downs of life in a foster family. Disney, which owns ABC Family, is in the business of entertainment, of course, and as such, it's looking for ratings out of this thing. But foster care advocates are hoping the show will pull in corporate support and perhaps help change the image of a system that involves 500,000 kids in this country. Andrea Gardner reports.
Here's a clip from The Fosters.
Who's this?
Oh, this is Kelly. She's going to be staying with us for a little while.
Oh, okay, staying with us. Nice to meet you.
And the rest of the family? Two moms, one biological son, two foster children now adopted, and Callie. Kate Juergens oversees development for ABC Family. She says she hopes the show will change the way people think about foster care.
I hope we are making it accessible. I hope we're making it seem normal. And I think it's the job of this network to depict the idea of family in as wide a variety of ways as possible.
Advocates like the sound of that. They argue that the foster care system is often so vilified that it drives families away.
The challenge is that if foster parents commit a crime or abuse a child, that's what ends up on the news.
That's Hannah Gregory, founder of Shoestring, a marketing agency that works with nonprofits. She says changing an image takes public education and money.
And that's usually what a public service campaign is.
Which is very, very costly for a nonprofit organization to do, which is where the corporations come in.
Corporations have the opportunity to bring legitimacy to this issue in a way that the general public doesn't.
That's Jeannie Pritzker, founder of the nonprofit Foster Care Counts, whose partners include Nestle and Paul Mitchell. Foster Care Counts is trying to increase opportunities for foster kids by attracting families all along the socioeconomic spectrum.
One might find that foster kids are getting into foster families where every kid in that family, foster kid and biological kid, are expected to have post-secondary education, and it affects them dramatically financially.
Right now, only about 3% of foster kids graduate from college.
I think that having someone like Disney ABC behind them is extremely empowering for foster families.
And if people watch, it could be pretty empowering for ABC. Modern Family, Disney's other big mashup, is one of the most popular shows on TV. In Los Angeles, I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
We'll be right back. On the theme of retirement and one's golden years, as we were talking about earlier with that Social Security story, there are, give or take, 50,000 Americans living in Costa Rica. A lot of them are baby boomers, sold on the dream of retiring to a tropical paradise. So from the Fronteras desk at KJZZ, Peter O'Dowd has the story of a Phoenix man who's making that move and what he's risking to do it.
The man's name is Bill Peace.
So it's sort of like my last big hurrah, my bucket list.
Peace is single and 64, counting the days until January when he'll leave his management job and higher education behind.
And the days of internet and Blackberries and 24-hour television and news. So I'm looking forward to settling down and living life for the sake of living life.
From his office in Phoenix, Peace pulls up photos of his life-to-be in Costa Rica. He's bought land on the Pacific coast in a development specifically marketed to gringos.
Look straight down. That's my lot you're looking at with the big tree there.
Peace is jumping in head first. The land and the house cost $85,000. That's more than his entire life savings. Americans still mainly go to Mexico and Canada to retire, but Central America is quickly becoming the next big deal. The number of Americans who collect their Social Security checks in Costa Rica has jumped 67% since 2002.
Costa Rica has the economic and political stability that a lot of people crave.
Erin Van Reenen is the author of Living Abroad in Costa Rica. She does have a warning.
People who go to a place like Costa Rica thinking that their life is going to be pretty much the same, only cheaper and warmer, those are the people that are going to have a little bit of trouble.
People like John Dungan.
Oh, God, there were so many things that went wrong.
Back in 2009, Dungan and his wife spent their life savings on a house in Costa Rica. He was happy for a while, but then Dungan discovered someone had been stealing electricity from his meter, and the power company wouldn't help. When an ATM stole his money, the bank didn't help either. When the electricity surged during tropical storms, his appliances blew out.
I mean, just, you know, smoke and bam.
The refrigerator, the microwave, a printer, all destroyed. Troubles added up. Costa Rica lost its charm, and Dungan had a revelation.
We shouldn't be here.
But they couldn't go home to Texas just yet because no one would buy their house. A year later, fed up and $100,000 in the hole, they simply walked away.
Don't buy property, don't build a house, don't buy a house. The recommendation is rent.
But for Americans visiting Costa Rica, it's hard to resist the advertisements in English that sell the dream of cheap land. That includes Americans like Bill Peace. A month after meeting me in Phoenix, we visit his new house for the first time.
This is it. Los Tucanos.
Los Tucanes is a development of a dozen or so colorful casitas cast against the deep green of the surrounding jungle. Peace's casita is simple as can be. Concrete construction, two small bedrooms. When Peace moves in, he'll be one of two full-time residents. Most of his neighbors go home for months during the rainy season. He knows those who succeed here learn to live like the locals do, with tolerance for heat, bureaucracy, and a host of unknowns.
There's a lot of anxiety, yeah.
And excitement. Peace plans to live on $2,000 a month from Social Security. To cut back, he'll leave almost everything in Phoenix except his grandmother's Dutch oven and half a dozen suitcases.
I don't want to say that, gosh, I wish I had done this 10 years from now if I'm still alive. I don't want that to be my legacy to myself.
So Peace will take a risk to seek the pure life, or as Costa Ricans famously call it, the pura vida. I'm Peter O'Dowd for Marketplace.
LeBron James and the Miami Heat are a win away from getting back to the NBA Finals. They beat Indiana last night 90-79. But this Eastern Conference Championship Series might also be called the Battle of the T-Shirt. From WLRN in Miami, Phil Latzman reports.
When watching a Miami Heat home game, do not adjust your television's brightness. The glare you're getting is part of the Heat's White Hot campaign. For all of their home games during the NBA playoffs, the team hands out a white T-shirt to all 20,000 fans who come through the gate.
We use them to kind of get the crowd excited about what the campaign is, which is wearing white to the game.
Michael McCullough is the Miami Heat's executive vice president and chief marketing officer.
We give those T-shirts out because it's really a marketing and a branding opportunity for us outside of the arena, more so than inside the building.
Other NBA teams have also gotten into the T-shirt bonanza. At Indiana Pacers games, the crowd is awash in yellow. Fans of the Oklahoma City Thunder formed a sea of powder blue. Stephen McDaniel is professor at the University of Maryland specializing in sports marketing. He says there is more to it than just getting fans to wear the gear.
You're showing fans that this is the type of in-game experience you're going to get, because all of the sports leagues now are facing a challenge of getting people in seats.
McDaniel says the T-shirt giveaways also give teams a chance to reward their best fans and present a unified front for a national TV audience.
Really, you have shown that all of these fans are involved in a game because they have put their T-shirt on over whatever they're wearing.
Meanwhile, outside the Heat's home at the American Airlines Arena in downtown Miami, Carl Jacobson wears one of those free T-shirts. He says he relies on them as part of his wardrobe.
Yeah, I've missed 3 games in 18 years for the Heat. All my T-shirts, I don't pay. I just wear the giveaways.
But not all NBA teams feel the same way about T-shirt marketing. Until now, the Western Conference champion San Antonio Spurs have chosen not to hand them out to their fans. In Miami, I'm Phil Latzman for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note on the way out today, in which the Federal Reserve meets interplanetary orbital dynamics. Here's what I'm talking about, because I'm sure it's not clear. There is, as you may have heard, an asteroid that is zipping by planet Earth today. We're going to be okay. Don't worry about it. It's not going to get any closer than 3.5 million miles, NASA says. But here is the great part about the Fed. The name of this thing? Asteroid 1998 QE2. Get it? QE2, quantitative easing 2. Or maybe that was just me who thought that was funny because I've been doing this too long. I don't know. Give me a little love, will you? All right, we're done. That's Marketplace from APM today. The Dow off 208 points, about 1.3%. The NASDAQ fell 35 points, 1%. The S&P 500 shed 23 points, 1.4%. Come on, QE2. It was funny. Our theme music was composed by VJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Sitar Nieves. The executive producer is Deborah Clark. JJ Yor is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you back here, Monday, all right? Have a great weekend. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.